acceptance is not a passive, subordinate type of behavior or attitude. It's not. Acceptance allows us to make the choices that are best for us, and they might be assertive choices.
That's Daniel Miller, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Before becoming a best-selling author, Daniel Miller had a varied career in business, law, and real estate. We'll learn about his journey from being a compulsive controller to choosing acceptance. He joins us to talk about his latest book, The Gifts of Acceptance, Embracing People and Things as They Are. Daniel, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dan.
Tell us a bit about your background and what led you to where you are now in regard to acceptance.
Well, I was a type A excessive controller, started out as an attorney, evolved into investment real estate, in which my modus operandi was really to try to control everything and everyone, and felt that I had the ability to do that. And that led to a successful life in the sense of, you know, financially and business success, but not internally. I never had a sense of peace and comfort and without fears. I was very fear-driven, as most controllers are. Over a 20-year period, I started writing more of my own self-help book, and the book eventually evolved into an actual book that came out about 7 years ago, and that was Losing Control, Finding Serenity, which discussed some of my stories of others, you know, why control hurts us, how to let it go, and the benefits that follow from that. And the main tool, for me anyways, and I think for most people, of letting go of control is acceptance. When we accept people and life as they are, there's no need to control. And I started writing on that, again, from my personal explorations of my own challenges with acceptance, interviewing others, doing research, and that eventually evolved over the last 6 years into my current book, you know, The Gifts of Acceptance. So I still control. We all control. It's a matter of moderation and balance, right? And I really work hard on trying to accept people particularly and realizing that, you know, everybody has their own life path, including our children and our mates. And the best thing I can do for them and for myself is to allow them to follow their own life paths.
Well, let's talk a bit more about that. As in the subtitle of your book, how does embracing people and things help us?
Well, as I say, one thing that removes the need to control. Another, I feel, very important thing is that it reveals the options or paths that are best for us. And let me explain a little bit what I mean by that. I define acceptance as not that we're condoning or excusing another's behavior or that we are approving it, but we are taking a look at the underlying and objective reality of the situation or the person, what that person may have done to us or we think they may have done to us. And when we can do that in a more neutral, even-keeled way, and that means processing our fears and our resentments and what's holding us back from that, when we get to that even-keeled, more detached type of acceptance, it allows us to recognize the choices that we do have that will best suit us. And I have found that time and again in business and in personal affairs is that it gets us out of that feeling of feeling stuck, of feeling bound to a person or situation. It's a very freeing acceptance, and it reduces our stress and our anxiety because, again, when we accept, there's no need to control. There's no need to worry as much, to stress as much.
So, as you well know, sometimes that's easier said than done. You know, what prevents us from being more accepting?
It's definitely more easier said than done. And that's why I say it's incremental steps, Dan, that we take little at a time and that we see the results. There are some hurdles. One is if our expectations are too high of people. You know, when we're expecting our mates to be certain ways or our children to do certain things or our friends to be certain ways, we're not accepting them. When we expect, we can't accept. So we have to moderate our expectations. That's one thing. We have to deal with our denial because when we are in denying a situation or person or whatever it is, We're not aware of what we need to accept. I have a chapter on letting go of denial because I think it's such an important thing that we have to overcome. In other words, we get into this pattern of wishful thinking, deflecting, being the victim. Those types of things prevent us from really looking at what we need to examine, the situation as it is. And then from that, again, let's say the choices that come. Another significant obstacle is our fears and angers. When we are fearful of people or situations, we tend not to accept them. When we're angry, we tend not to accept them. And I like to use the acronym for fear. There's two of them for F-E-A-R, future events already ruined, and false evidence appearing real. And I think that's what defines fear, and that's what we have to overcome. And again, I do write about that in the book, some ways that we can start to do that. But those are significant obstacles. And I would say the final big obstacle is we're not humble enough. There's that feeling that we know what's best for others. And I'll say that personally for myself. That's been a lifelong struggle, that I feel that my way is the best way, or, you know, for someone quite too often. And I need to work on that and to realize that I don't know what's best for another person. I often don't know what's best for me. So that can be a significant obstacle to acceptance. So as you said, it's easier to say than to do, but we can make progress, and it may be in incremental steps. And once we start accepting, even incrementally, we start feeling these results, and it gives us the confidence to go forward with it.
You talked about expectations and that we expect too much. We expect too much of others, but we also expect too much of ourselves, and that leads to all sorts of negativity.
It does, exactly. We have to be, I guess, as you say, kind and gentle of ourselves, and to realize that no one's perfect. We all fail, but to be able to accept failure, I write in the book, is failure breeds success. You know, ultimately, if we can take the lessons from our failures, and this gets into the whole area of self-acceptance, of accepting ourselves and how important that is. And I do write about that, about the importance of taking what I call personal inventory of our pluses and our minuses and our, you know, our assets and liabilities. And sometimes what we may think is an asset might be a liability and vice versa. But these are the things we have to try to work through. And I agree, is if we're expecting too much of ourselves, then we can't accept ourselves as we are.
You touched upon this, but I want to give you a chance to talk about this a little bit more, because I'm
sure
thinking someone might be listening and thinking, well, I kind of get this, but it goes against kind of the human nature of wanting to be strong. And if I'm too accepting, will people perceive me as weak, or will they see me as complacent?
Right, or a doormat. And what I say to those people is that acceptance is not a passive, subordinate type of behavior or attitude. It's not. Acceptance allows us to make the choices that are best for us. And they might be assertive choices, but those choices will not be reactive to situations or people. They will be better thought out and visualized as the things that we can do for ourselves. We can always disengage from situations or people. Because what I get into is that, you know, we don't, there's that fine line. We don't want to get where we're being abused, you know. We always can take steps to remove ourselves, and I don't suggest otherwise. So it's more of a neutral mindset. It's not a passive mindset. It's a neutral mindset that allows us to see at least better what I call the, you know, the objective reality, the truth, so to speak, and to act upon that.
You address this in your book, but I want to talk about parenting, because it seems like there's a balance here. And how do you find that balance between accepting your children as they are and fulfilling your role to provide some parental guidance?
That's what I call the fundamental parental challenge. I've had three children, and so I've had a lot of practice and a lot of mistakes. But I think our tendency as parents is to want to overmanage our children's lives. And I think if we can step back, and an example I can give is my youngest daughter when she was 12. The way she does her homework, lies on bed, loud music, not taking notes. you know, that's why she's doing her homework, studying for tests. And, you know, I was just the opposite. As I say, I was this controller disciplinarian where I'd take notes and very organized and all that. And one evening I went into her room and I said, Lana, you know, how can you study like that? How can you prepare like that? And she looked up at me and she says, Daddy, I process things differently than you. I'm different than you. And I was so struck by that, Dan, because she is so different than me. And she gets good grades her way, but she needs the sense of urgency in order to focus clearly. So that's one of the things where I think as parents, is I believe that we feel that we know what's best for them too often, and we need to step back, allow them to learn, allow them to make the mistakes, to have the consequences, so they can become self-sufficient, self-reliant. At the same time, this balance, as what you suggest, is the guidance, I believe, comes in the guidance in morals and ethics, manners, way, you know, treat people. So there is that balance. And again, we have to deal with our parental fears primarily. We have to take our egos, our social views of what people may think, out of the equation. So it really is a challenge, but it really can improve the bond. I found with my children, I've become so much closer when I realize that they are making their own path and they're becoming more independent in doing that. And when I'm that way, they open up to me. There's a connection there. They feel freer to share and trust because I'm not going to be critical or judgmental.
Well, let's talk a bit about aging. The old saying goes, aging is better than the alternative, but it is a challenge. How do we adapt to the changes that aging forces on us and be more accepting of this stage of life?
Yeah, that's, believe me, I'm in that position right now. I'm 74. I'll be 75 in a couple months. So in writing this chapter, it really allowed me to focus on my own life and just some of the questions that you're raising. And I could just share with you and your listeners what I believe, what's been helping me, and also some of the research. Practicing gratitude, being grateful for the things that I can still do, the experiences I can still experience, even though that, you know, losses do come with aging. But that acceptance of that, that looking at life is what they call life's impermanence. There's an ebb and flow, and there'll be, you know, ups and downs, and we need to be accepting that. And, you know, some of the studies have shown that elders are actually more content in their lives than some younger generations, primarily because they are more accepting. For me, finding purpose is so important. What I'm doing right now is hopefully purposeful. You know, I'm writing, I'm sharing, I'm speaking. I am blessed because I'm financially secure that I can do these things. But it makes me feel good. It makes me feel worthy because I'm finding this purpose. And another interesting thing on the scientific realm, they now have studies that show through the neurogenesis is that elders actually do create 700 brain cells a day by being active, by thinking differently, by doing. So these are the things that I would say lessen the struggle, okay? Struggle is always going to be there, but if we can have these more positive mindsets, I feel we can be content as we go forward in our lives.
What's the big takeaway for readers of this book? What's the most important thing you want them to understand about acceptance?
Acceptance is a choice. And we all have that choice to accept or not to accept. And the takeaway is, my hope is by showing what I call the gifts of acceptance, the benefits of acceptance, and offering some tools on how to do that, that readers will be able to start incorporating into their lives and receiving these gifts. And acceptance is a choice, and I like to say when you accept what is, you can discover what might be. And I think, Dan, today in this world, the way things are now, we need acceptance more than ever. That's one of the themes I adopted on my website is, you know, help make acceptance go viral. We need more acceptance. And so I hope readers will see this. They will learn to apply it in their own lives, in their own relationships, and in their own situations, and that it could at least be a conversation starter. of a very important conversation that I think we need today.
Well, thank you for talking with me today.
Well, thank you, Dan. It's been my pleasure, and I appreciate the questions. They're great questions.
Daniel Miller's latest book is The Gifts of Acceptance, Embracing People and Things as They Are. You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. On Facebook, you'll find us at KPR Conversations. That's all one word. You can use the KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. And you can sign up for the Conversations podcast on iTunes. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.